Our gospel lesson will be John chapter 6, verses 28 through 35. Then they said to him, "What must we do to perform the works of God?" Jesus answered them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him who he has sent." So they said to him, "What sign are you going to give us then, so that we may see it and believe you? What work are you performing?" "Our ancestors ate manna in the wilderness, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat." Then Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is that which comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. But I said to you that you have seen me, and yet do not believe." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Philosophers say that we should study history in order to learn from it. Today we're going to compare the Israelites to the United States. In Deuteronomy, we study the history of the Israelites. Actually, it's in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, so it must be important. But because it is Old Testament, some people don't believe it has very much relevance to us today. But history has a way of repeating itself, and the laws and the statutes that Moses gave can most definitely be applied today, just as our fathers did when they were setting up our laws. The Israelites were slaves in Egypt for over 400 years, and God used Moses as an instrument to free them. God led them in the desert for 40 years, being their sole provider for the millions of people until he brought them into the promised land. We learn from the scriptures that the Israelites took their first fruits of the harvest into the temple and presented them unto Almighty God in humble thanksgiving for his blessings and his mercies. By this act of devotion, they declared their alliance to him and expressed their gratitude for the harvest and for the liberty. Our nation's founding fathers, in similar manner, gathered to give thanks to God for deliverance from famine and for freedom to worship. Tomorrow we celebrate the 4th of July, Independence Day. On this day in 1776, the Continental Congress adopted the final draft of the Declaration of Independence, a declaration of the Congress of the 13 United States of America, by which they formally declared that these colonies were free and independent states, not subject to the government of Great Britain. Some of the colonists, beginning with the Pilgrims of 1620, came to America to create communities where they could worship in their own way. Throughout the colonial period, many groups headed for the colonies to escape persecution from their religious beliefs. Relations between the American colonies and Great Britain began to break down during the mid-1700s. Little by little, Britain tried to tighten its control over the colonies. Its leaders passed laws that taxed the colonists and restricted their freedom. The colonists had become accustomed to governing themselves and had developed a sense of unity and independence. As a result, the Revolutionary War broke out between the two sides, and the colonists boldly declared their freedom from British rule. In verse 2 of Deuteronomy, and all throughout Deuteronomy, the Israelites were instructed to remember what God did for them in the wilderness. Our forefathers knew this too. Since the formation of the United States, we have acknowledged our belief in God as a nation, always keeping it before us. One example, and the most obvious, is our currency. Our national motto is "In God We Trust," and it is printed on our currency. The second would be the Liberty Bell. It was first rung on July 8th of 1776 to announce the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. But did you know that the inscribing on it is from Leviticus 25, verse 10? "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land and to all the inhabitants thereof." Our pledge states, "One nation under God." The flag is also our symbol of liberty and freedom, and actually shared with you the colors today and their meaning. Justice, purity, courage. Courage, justice, and purity. Also, the flag is specifically folded 13 times, which have representation meanings. There was an insert in your bulletins today on what the flag folding means. If you have a member of the armed forces that passes away, you are given a folded flag. and these are the meanings for each fold. While in the desert, Moses was constantly teaching the Israelites the commandments, the statutes, and the laws, and they were instructed to keep them before them. In Deuteronomy, Moses addressed the issues of judges and officials in reference to administering the law. In chapter 16, verse 8, Moses told them that they were to appoint judges and officials for each of the tribes in all of the towns, much like we have today. In chapter 17, verses 19 through 20, Moses anticipated the day would come when they would think they needed a king. So he gave them instructions for the king. Amazingly, we talked about that this morning in Sunday school. God was the only king they had until they decided they needed an earthly king. The rules for the king were he must always keep a copy of the law with him and read it daily as long as he lives. That way he will learn to fear the Lord, his God, by obeying all the terms of the law. This regular reading will prevent him from becoming proud and acting as if he is above his fellow citizens. It will also prevent him from turning away from these commandments in the smallest way. They were surrounded by pagans, a corrupt and sinful people. God told them that the laws he was giving them was to keep them from doing those things that he despised, for them to be a holy people. We live in a pagan world too, but for us the enemy is more subtle and not so obviously threatening. Like the Israelites, we are constantly in danger of compromising our souls. Some recent news headlines that you may have heard. On March 28th of 2005, a Colorado Supreme Court threw out the death penalty in a rape and murder case because jurors had studied Bible verses such as an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. During deliberations, the juror had sentenced him to die in his 1995 trial. But defense lawyers discovered five of the jurors had looked up Bible verses, copied them down, and talked about them while deliberating on his sentence behind closed doors. During oral arguments before the Supreme Court last month, this was in February, the defense attorney said the jurors had gone outside the law. She said, "They went to the Bible to find out God's position on capital punishment." The ironic thing to the story is that they were sworn in by taking an oath on the Bible and swearing to tell the truth, so help you God. And even more ironic, in an article published by Althaus on March 29th, it states that during the trial, Mr. Harlan's lawyer specifically urged the jurors to consider biblical wisdom with a request that they find mercy in their hearts, as God ultimately took mercy on Abraham. In another article on June 18th, 05, there was an article that came out of Greensboro about using the Quran instead of the Bible to take an oath on in Guilford County. The Greensboro Islamic Center offered to donate copies of the Muslim text so that Muslim witnesses could be sworn in on the Quran before testifying in Guilford County. The good news in this story is that Guilford County judges took a stand and told officials with the Islamic Center that they would not allow the practice in their courtrooms, stating that an oath on the Quran is not a lawful oath under the law. The language in the law refers to laying one's hand on the holy scriptures, and it has been in use since 1777. While some changes have occurred over the years, there is an allowance for anyone who objects to swearing on the Bible to just raise their hand and give an affirmation to tell the truth, which is treated the same by the law. We even find the Air Force Academy in the news. The Colorado-based academy is waiting for an Air Force task force to report later this summer that they will address the issue of religion at the academy. The Washington-based Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, which opposes most government funding of military chaplains and other faith-based activities, cites numerous complaints in a 14-page report that believers make it difficult for those of other faiths and no faith to enjoy the constitutional freedoms the military should be fighting to preserve. Students, officers, and activists all acknowledge that the problem is partly generational. They say the U.S. military was once nearly 100% Christians, and officers, some of them now in senior positions, became accustomed to openly linking their faith to their service. Lieutenant Colonel Rask says the U.S. military is changing, just as the U.S. society is. And just last week in the news, there were articles about the displaying of the Ten Commandments. Just like the Israelites, we're instructed. The Ten Commandments have proudly been displayed before us all over this country, in courthouses, in schools, and in parks. Our laws were created by our forefathers based on the Ten Commandments. In an article on June 28th, at Gap Press, regarding the Ten Commandments, the High Court both affirmed a public Ten Commandment monument on the Capitol grounds in Austin, Texas, and ruled unconstitutional the frame display in two courtrooms in Kentucky. The court said that the displays of the Ten Commandments on government property are not inherently unconstitutional. Each exhibit demands scrutiny to determine whether it amounts to a government promotion of religion, and that each case should be resolved on a case-by-case basis. In the case of the monument in Texas, the state was sued, claiming the monument amounted to a state-endorsed religion. In a 5-4 ruling, it was that close, the court said the monument was historical and did not violate the Constitution. Bernie Reese with the National Clergy Council states that he believes that the Kentucky decision is just the latest example of moral decline in America. He stated, "This is a frightening thing to look around and see us debating the very law that preserved this nation for over 200 years. We are on a road of extracting God from our public life, and that is a tragedy. As a matter of fact, it is an insult on the Declaration of Independence, which proclaimed as a matter of law that this nation recognizes God, the Creator, and that our laws, which were based on the Ten Commandments, gave us the inalienable rights which we exercise." In another Ten Commandments issue, Ray Moore was removed from his position as Alabama's Chief Justice for refusing to remove the Ten Commandment monument from the state judicial building. He said it was his duty under Alabama Constitution to publicly acknowledge the God of the Bible. Ironic to both of these stories, there is a wall carving in the Supreme Court chambers of Moses holding the Ten Commandments. Is this what our forefathers had in mind? I don't think so. We have stretched the law to bend it to our own use. Then Moses addressed the issue of prosperity in verses 7 through 17. He describes the riches that we find in the Promised Land, a good land flowing with streams and pools of water, a land where food is plentiful and nothing is lacking. When I read this, I see the United States. We live in the land of plenty. We eat until we're full. We have the beautiful houses. In Deuteronomy 15:6, Moses goes on to say, "You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over you." The United States has had this privilege for years. But Moses goes on to give them a warning that when you have eaten, and you are full, and you have built beautiful houses, and your herds have multiplied, in verse 14 he says, "Don't become proud and forget the Lord your God." He warned them that when people prosper and become prideful, that they might claim it was their power and their strength that produced their wealth. So what does God require of a nation? In chapter 10, verses 12 through 13, it says, "He requires you to fear him, to live according to his will, to love and worship him with all your heart and soul, and to obey the Lord's command and laws." Independence from God means no longer having him in your daily thoughts. This forgetfulness will lead to disobedience of his commandments. Whereas in the wilderness, Israel had to depend on God for the necessities of life. During the time of Moses, the Israelites were starving in the desert after they left Egypt. He humbled them by letting them go hungry and then feeding them manna. God miraculously caused the bread to appear on the ground every morning. This bread continued to appear every day for 40 years until they entered the Promised Land. Then it stopped. Listen to these numbers. Take into account that God fed them every day for 40 years. For as many people as there, it would take 4,500 tons a day for 40 years, which would amount to 65 million tons of manna that just supernaturally appeared on the ground every morning. There was no natural source of water. They were in the desert. For this many people and the herds, it would take 11 million gallons of water every day to meet their basic needs, and not to mention that their clothes and shoes never wore out. Stop and think about all that for a minute. So many people, and God literally provided for all their needs. Because of his mercy, God provided food and water for the Israelites. just as he does for us today. Just as God gave the Israelites food so they could live and not die of hunger in the wilderness, in a similar way, God has given us food so that we can be blessed in this life and forever in the life to come. Christ shows us that he is the true bread. He is the soul. What bread is to the body, nourishes and supports the spiritual life. He is the bread of God. Let us listen to the words that Dawn read from John. Jesus said, "Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst." We need to live our lives dependent on God. We have all seen God's provision in our lives. In fact, we should all take some time to sit down and think about all the times that God has supernaturally provided for the needs in our lives. Times that you didn't have enough money or a difficult time in your life. But God was faithful to you each and every time, just as he was to the Israelites, and just as he has been to this great country that we live in. And he will be as long as we continue to keep him out front and thank him for the food, for our faith, and for our freedom, and give him all the glory, honor, and praise.